You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to OK Sis Podcast.
Hi, sisters. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Scout.
And we are sisters IRL.
I'm the older one.
Yes, Scout. We know.
Here at OK Sis, we believe women are multifaceted.
Which is why you can expect sisterly banter on a wide range of topics such as pop culture, our entrepreneurial journeys, and mental health routines.
We promise it'll be informative.
And silly.
As long as you don't get too loud, Mads.
Welcome to the sisterhood.
Hello and welcome back to the OK Sis podcast. This is a podcast. This is an audio format. It's an audio medium. My name is Mads.
And my name is Scout. And thank you for mansplaining what a podcast is to the podcast listeners. That was good.
You're very welcome. Just in case you forgot, like just audio in your earbuds.
People might think we're in the room. You know what I mean? Because like once you listen to a podcast for a long time, like you forget that those hosts aren't in the room with you.
Yeah. It's like phantom. You know how people have like phantom limb? It's like phantom OK Sisters. Like we're like ghosts in front of you. You try to talk back, but you know, unfortunately we can't hear you, but like I wish we could.
We can hear you on Geneva, our community center. We can hear you on Instagram at OK Sis Podcast in the DMs. You can send us a voice note. We'll send you one back. There's a lot of different ways we could talk back.
Let me give you an update, Scout. This morning. So it's very interesting. The other day, I was just saying that I never see celebrities in LA. Never. And it's very unfortunate because I go to all the basic bitch places that they are at.
I wouldn't say never. You have seen people. You have seen people.
My biggest claim to fame is I saw Zendaya and Jacob Elordi at Erewhon. And I had to tell Zendaya to please move because she was blocking my Apple Pay. So that was a big one. That was a big one that I tell all the time. But other than that, I did see Kendall Jenner at a Escuela Taqueria. But that, other than that, like, that is it.
No, it's just going to keep going. She's like, I did see this big influencer here, and I did see this person here.
It's just, for as many of the basic bitch places I go to, it is weird that I don't see them more often. That's what I should say. This morning, I went to the mecca of celebrity sightings, and that is SoulCycle West Hollywood. And I was soul cycling next to Malia Obama.
Wait, so you were like next to her?
I was the bike next to her.
Wow.
She walks in, gazelle, as tall as can be, just a gorgeous, thin gazelle. She walks in, Outdoor Voices, wearing Outdoor Voices. I mean, I wanted to like DM Outdoor Voices and be like, you guys, you're on Malia Obama's body, okay? So she comes in and I'm like, you know, I don't want to like stare at her, but I was like, is it her? Is it her? And I'm like, it's 100% her. And her and I struggled together.
See, I don't think I would have recognized her because I have images of the Obama daughters, but it's from like 8 years ago. So I definitely would not recognize them today.
No, you can't miss her. Like she is just so stunning and oh my God, like carried herself just like a fucking supermodel. I mean, just everything about her. I really tried to focus on the workout. Couldn't, was completely distracted. And yeah, I tried to follow her out.
You could be like, oh, Malia, have you listened to OK Sis?
OK Sis podcast. Are you interested in coming on OK Sis podcast?
I have an opportunity of a lifetime for you. For free, you can come on OK Sis podcast.
For free. Yeah, we'll let you on for free. So, you know, I didn't see the Secret Service. She walked out the back. I walked out the front and I was like, OK, maybe she's like going out a back door because I was like trying to like, you know, trying to find the Secret Service. But I think either the Secret Service was in the class with us and behind her, or they were like waiting for her right outside. I don't know.
Does Secret Service have to follow the kids forever?
Yes.
Forever. The kids.
Forever. She went to college. She had a boyfriend. He was at every game day. Secret Service was at every game day. Anytime she like had a one night stand, Secret Service is outside the one night stand. Like,
yeah, but that was when Obama was president.
No. To this day still.
Oy.
For their whole life. For their whole life. Both of them.
You know what? I don't know if that's worth it.
Oh, presidency?
Yeah, like as a president to know that your kids.
Your kids. Yeah. To do that to your kids.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, like Obama, selfish of him. Like he didn't think about the kids. Selfish.
Yeah.
So Malia, you know, going to SoulCycle, you know, just, I think it's like second nature. I'm sure they just fucking follow. She doesn't even like blink an eye. But anyways.
Is she the eldest? She's the eldest, right?
Yes, the eldest. She's the elder. The elder Obama. Yeah, it was a fantastic way to start my weekend. I was, you know, delighted to be in her presence. I think she like gave me some energy, like a lot of motivation to just like be who I am and like be authentic. And so we're recording this and then I'm off to Malibu to be another basic bitch. And I'm going to go to the Surfrider Hotel, which you and I frequented. Or not frequented, went to once.
Went and got too drunk at.
Went and, got very drunk and went through the KFC. What was it, KFC? No, Jack in the Box.
I was thinking about that last night.
Scout and I went to Nobu Malibu for my birthday in 2020. And we,
like, height of pandemic, there was like 2 weeks where the world opened up and we all went ham. And then we were like, wait, that was weird. And then went back into our houses.
It was so weird. Yeah, so we went to Nobu Malibu. You know, if you go to Nobu, just like make sure that you like eat a huge meal right before because you will be hungry.
And don't order a bottle if you can't finish it.
Don't order a bottle. That I can't believe we didn't finish it. Like, that's so unlike me to.
Okay, but we had been drinking since 11 a.m. Like, we were fucked up by the time we got to Nobu.
I'm a champion. I could have done it. I saw a hat that said corks are for losers. And I really, really, that deeply like resonates with me.
That sounds like an alcoholic shirt.
I think it fits my lifestyle.
Anybody who says that, that's like such an alcoholic statement.
Anyways, so we went to Nobu and then we were all both starving. So we went to Jack in the Box and we definitely have told this on the podcast, but whatever. We go through the drive-through and then the woman is like, okay, like go to the next window to get your food, because I was screaming. Like, I don't know why. I wasn't screaming at her, but I was just like being annoying as I usually am. And she was like, yeah, go to the next window. There is no next window. She literally just told us to leave. And so we back up and we're like, excuse me, Jack in the Box. There is no next window. And she's like, oh. Like, she literally tried to let us get out.
Yeah, that was incredible. And then you slept with your makeup on, and I'll never forget that or let you live that down.
Oh, God. I can't believe it. Anyway, so I'm returning to the scene of the crime. I'm going to Surfrider because my dear co-founder, Lauren, it's her birthday, and she's there. So I was like, yo, I'm gonna crash your birthday, and I'm going to show up, because as one knows, you can't go to the Surfrider unless someone is staying there, and that rooftop is fucking premium. So
wait, are you staying there? How are you getting back?
No, I'm driving there right now. I'm gonna have lunch with them, and then tonight is our stepbrother's graduation dinner from USC, and I bullied everyone,
was not invited because I'm not in the WhatsApp.
Yeah, I bullied everyone to going to Mastro's Ocean Club, which is an incredible steakhouse in Malibu.
You're such a little brat. You're such a brat. Every time mom's like, where should we all go for a family dinner? Maddie suggests the most expensive, most exclusive place. Then she gets in there and she orders like mom is made of, like, I don't know, fucking cash coming out of her fucking mouth. And then mom has to pick up a meal for all like 10 of us.
Okay, so our stepdad and our stepbrother asked me, what is a good steakhouse? And I said, look, because apparently our stepbrother Aaron likes steak. I said, look, the best steakhouse I have been to is Mastro's. And if you're going to go to Mastro's, we got to go to the Ocean Club because it's a beautiful view. So I didn't force them into doing anything. I just gave them the recommendation and suggestion, and that is where we're going. So all is this to say is I'm going to Surfrider now, and then I'm going to spend the day in Malibu and then go to Mastro's. I don't know where I'm going to be in between. So I'm going to kind of like bop around, maybe go to the Malibu Country Mart, maybe fuck around, go to El Matador, maybe fuck around, go to the beach.
Wow, you're living the life today.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day. So we got to wrap this up. What's your current fixation?
Oh, Maddie has bigger and better things to do than talk to her actual sister and her community of sisterhoods. Oh, yes, my current fixation. So I am frequenting actually wearing a little bit more makeup now these days because being pregnant, I have decided I definitely slipped into a first trimester depression and physically felt my worst. So I was like, what can I do to make myself feel better every single day if I physically feel terrible and like mentally I'm struggling a little bit? And I decided that I was going to get a blowout every week, that I signed up for Rent the Runway so that I kind of have new, fresh, beautiful clothing, and that I was just going to put a little bit of makeup on every single day just so that I can physically, you know, feel a little bit better, even though internally I was dying. So we all know I struggle with acne-prone skin. So I finally ordered this acne. It's for people who suffer from acne. It is a tinted moisturizer with incredible SPF. It's called Priya, P-R-I-I-A. And it's just, it's very minimal. One would not really know. I have like a little tinted whatever on, but it's just a nice little extra thing. I put it on. I put some mascara, some whatever. What's it called?
Eyeshadow.
But the Priya tinted moisturizer with good SPF is a great option if anybody likes putting on a tinted moisturizer every day but suffers from acne-prone skin. Unfortunately, I was using Ilia, which I loved the way it looked, but I'm really sorry. Ilia broke me out way too much. So having something that I can put on every single day where I literally don't break out is a dream. So if any sisters are struggling with acne and are looking for a tinted moisturizer, P-R-I-I-A, it's a very niche business. It's not like a trendy skincare brand vibe on the website. It's just effective, works specifically for this situation. Highly recommend.
Great. I love that. I love that you found that. I'm still on my Dr. Jart bit nonsense. Like, it is the best. It makes me look like I have the Paris filter on my face IRL. Like,
is it a tinted moisturizer?
I don't know what it is. Tiger grass correcting cream. It like just reduces redness. Remember that shit? That's OG sisters. Okay, sis.
Yeah.
OG. Oh, I am still on that shit. Like, will not. That's, I don't have any foundation. I don't have like actual makeup. I don't know what it is, but it is. Fantastic. It's fantastic. Okay. Yeah.
Real quick, for anyone, sisters who are struggling from acne, I do this now all the time. ClearStem, you know the skincare brand that I love, ClearStem on their website has, under I think the resources or the education tab, a list of pore clogging ingredients that you should not use if you have acne prone skin. And so whenever I buy a new product, I just type all the ingredients into there. And if it shows up as a pore clogging ingredient, I won't buy it because I know it will most likely break my skin out.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's,
wow, that's an amazing resource.
It's so fucking good. I'm actually going to put the link of this resource in the show notes because if you're struggling with acne, this is the move. I've done it with any new product I add and my skin, look at my skin.
I mean, glowing. It might be the Zoom filter, but I think it's glowing. Where's the pregnancy glow? When does that kick in?
You know, I would like to report that a lot of people have told me I'm glowing, but clearly you just can't see it.
Okay. Maybe it's going to happen this trimester because you were unwell. You were unwell the first trimester. So maybe it's coming. Maybe we haven't peaked yet.
Move on. What's your current fixation? Just smoothly move the fuck along before I literally dragon fire your fucking head off. You understand?
Dragon fire? Oh, like a fire from a dragon. Got it.
If you piss me off, I'm a motherfucking dragon and I will burn you to the ground.
I know. No, you're like a T-Rex.
I am a T-Rex that burns fire. I'm a dragon and a T-Rex in motherfucking one. You can't fuck with me right now.
Yeah. Khaleesi.
Oh, I'm schwitzing now just thinking about the fact that you're on Zoom and I can't burn your head off.
Oh, fantastic. I know. Really feel grateful for this divide that we have. Okay, so microfixation is this new trend. So last week I talked about how I usually can't get into trends because Gen Zs like to wear tight and crop top things that just don't look good on my body. And so usually I am not available to partake in the trends. But, you know, I was doing my Greece shopping planning, which is very, very in advance, but I just got really excited to look at all the lean-ins and get all of the neutrals. I went on Zara and there's this new trend of corsets, okay? It's like not off the shoulder.
It's not a new trend.
Okay, but right now it's trendy to have a corset.
Oh, it's been trendy for like a year.
Okay, I am now partaking in the trend.
Okay.
Of the corset. What is it called when it's off the shoulder? Not off the shoulder. Off the shoulder.
A bodice?
Strapless. So I got a couple of these. I got a army green. I got a white. I was like, let me just see. Let me just try it on because I won't know unless I try. I'm a new person. I transformed into a different person when I put on this corset. Like I was, dare I say, like a hot girl.
I am like really struggling to imagine what kind of fucking corset you're putting on your body.
I'll put it on the Instagrams.
Is it something, wait, hold on. I'm just going to share my screen. Just look at the screen and tell me, is this it?
Yes. Okay.
Hey, okay. Yes. Is that comfortable? Because yes. I tried on a corset once, like an actual corset from a sex shop, which is like corset shit. And it, when they sucked me in, I felt my organs move in my body.
We're not talking like that. Like where you tie it in the back. It's stretchy in the back. I have a little cropter one and it's a different material. It's not satin. So listen. This is my new identity. Like this is my new identity. I feel, because I've struggled a lot with going out outfits. And I'm not talking like going to bars and like going clubbing. I'm talking like just going to dinner. I don't have good tops. Like I have good bottoms.
Elevated.
I don't have good tops. This is the answer.
You know what? Common problem. I never have the right top for an elevated dinner. And you're right. This is the answer. And I'm pissed I didn't jump on this because I literally cannot do this now with my pregnant belly.
Yeah, you can't do it. You can't do it now. It's the answer because I like to wear very oversized bottoms because of, you know, the bloatation situation. So it looks so good with an oversized jean or an oversized pant because it's a little tight, you know, but it doesn't, I don't know, something about it was just so flattering. So everyone run, don't walk to Zara. They have a ton of these little corset situations and they're great for summer because then, you know, it's hot as fuck. So
beautiful. I love it. Okay, yeah. Tell us about this wonderful episode we have with her first 100K because it was everything we needed and more.
Honestly, I think Tori is the third sister. Like she was definitely on our wavelength. She came to play. She has the same energy as us. I have been following her for so long. Our stepsister introduced me to her on the Ticket a Talk and she has just become such a incredible resource for women to step into their money empowerment, step into education and really just take our power back when it comes to money. So obviously we go into tangible steps about, you know, budgeting expenses, what are like some money myths that she'd like to bust. But we also talk about financial feminism, which is really what her edge is and like why she's like really on this, you know, crusade to make sure women are in the money conversation, in the narrative. And she was fantastic. I like came off of it in a high, on a high.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the main things that I personally took away was I felt really comfortable to make that first step to open up an investment account of my own. So she really helped us walk away with I don't even know what the proper word is here, what companies to use. Like you'll hear her say all of that, but we always wonder like, who do you invest with? Robinhood, JP Morgan, da 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 da. She really simplified it. She gave her honest answer of which one collects the less fees so that you make the most money. So I really felt as if I walked away from this episode having a very clear understanding of how to set up an investment account. So that was my biggest takeaway. She's, as you said, incredible. And I really think like, we should do like American Idol for the third sister and have like a third co-host every now and then with a third sister. That would be so fun.
Tori's up there. Like she's up there. We vibed. Yeah. We vibed.
Anyway, sisters, we hope you enjoy and we hope you get some financial advice, some feminism, some all the things from Tori.
Some feminism?
Well, you know, some empowerment as women because we talk a lot about how in this episode, how I have always defaulted for my husband to do all of our investment stuff and how I feel really empowered to make money. I'm like, no, I can make money all day long. That's my jam. It's what I love to do. But investing is somewhere I just haven't really dipped my toes into, and I've allowed my husband to take the lead on that. So she really makes a case for why we should set up our own investment accounts and why we should get to know that landscape. So we know this is going to provide so much value. Enjoy, and we love you.
Love you.
The other day, my cousin looked at me and asked if I got a treatment in my hair. I said no, but I am taking Nutrafol. You see, sisters, I had some shedding issues postpartum when it came to my hair, so I made it my mission to support my hair growth and strengthen my hair. I mean, Mads, you saw my hair last time I was up in LA, and you even complimented me. Which, sisters, you know that when Mads compliments me, it's a big deal.
I do have to give this one to you, Scout. Your hair is looking thick, strong, and beautiful. When it comes to hair thinning, it's complicated. The problem is, it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker and stronger hair.
Every morning after I eat breakfast, I take 4 pills, and it becomes a seamless addition to my morning routine. But the reason I decided to go with Nutrafol when supporting my hair health is that Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Oh, also, Nutrafol makes the best Mother's Day present, especially for new moms. The perfect way to show them that you care about their postpartum support.
Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OKSIS. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OKAYSIS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OKSIS.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, we love a bold lip.
That's all I do anymore, is just bolds and lips. That's all I do. That's it.
You know, I try to do the bold red lip, and I see it on everybody else. Everybody looks amazing. Everyone looks bold, fearless, all the things. And then I put it on, and I feel like it makes my lips look smaller.
Okay. Do you want my advice?
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
always.
I do.
One, I didn't find the lip that worked on me, the red lip that worked, until like this year. Because I wore like a really like very classic, like the 1950s, like what you associate with the red lip, like the Mad Men red lip. But it made, because I have a very red complexion, it just made my face look really red. So I found this that, like, in real life, this is almost more of a coral, but it's it's like a red that looks great on anybody, any skin tone, anything. So that's the first thing, is like finding the red that works for you. Cause I went like very classic red and it just didn't look good.
Wait, so what's the brand?
It's Sephora, the lip stain that's like $14. That's all I wear. That's all I wear. And this will stay on all fucking day. It's great.
Wow. Because I have olive complexion, and a red lip can be jarring at times.
Yep. So I have 3 colors in their lip stain I wear. I have this bright red. I have our very classic like HFK color that we actually based all of our branding around the color of lipstick I wore all the time, which blows a lot of people's minds. But that,
I
like
that.
Our burgundy HFK color is actually based on the lipstick. We like color matched it. And then I have this like pale pink I'll wear. And then it's a stain, so it stains matte. So it's like, it's not even a lipstick. So like, I've been drinking coffee and you have like a little bit of lipstick, but like not much.
So this is the Sephora brand?
I literally go grab it for you after we're done and I'll show you. It's $15 and it'll last you like 3 months. And then the other thing I've learned is just like, I literally started doing this like a couple weeks ago, is like, just outline the top of your lip before you like put everything else in it. Because I would do the bottom lip first. And in terms of like making your lips look like, and I also have, I'm like, one of my favorite features about myself is like, I have pretty nice lips. I have a bunch of other things where I don't love it. But I think with that is, it's like, I was too focused on like putting in the lipstick on the bottom rather than lining it on top first and then filling it in around the whole thing. And the stain, the best thing about the stain and the worst thing is it stains everything. So like, you get to the point where you're like, you almost want to go under your lip, even though it's still part of your lip. Right. Anyway, we just launched right into this.
We just, I mean, you beauty know what? Tips.
Get you a girl that can do both. Tell you how to make, save money, budget money, and do a red lip.
That's like the only beauty tip I have. That's it. The lipstick's great, the only thing I got going on. That's it, baby.
Oh, Tori, we are so happy to have you here. First of all, I do need to say my stepsister is a fangirl of yours.
That's kind.
When I told her that we were having you on the pod, she said, I literally had all my friends open a high yield savings account and start their emergency funds because of her.
Fuck yeah. I love it. We love it. Tell her hi.
I will. Natalia, if you're listening, what's up? Okay, let's just dive right in. I mean, we are so excited to talk to you. Obviously, sisters know this month is money, finance, just, you know, talking the shit about how to be better at money as women. And you're just the perfect person to talk all about this. So we want to start, though, a little bit about your personal history with money.
Sure.
Obviously, money is just such a personal thing, and it's very emotional. I think people don't talk about that. So talk to us a little bit about how you kind of got into this field and grew this brand.
Yeah. If you would have told me 5 years ago that my job, my career, my life would be as a financial educator, I would have laughed in your face. Like, this was not part of the plan. I majored in communications and theater in college. So this was not part of the plan. But I grew up with a family that was very focused on financial education. And I didn't realize that that was a novelty or something different until I started having conversations with other friends and realized, oh, that was a privilege. And with that privilege came responsibility. So I was the friend all of my friends were coming to about, you know, advice and guidance around money. And I learned, you know, how to save money, how not to overspend on credit cards, how to mindfully spend. And again, I thought that was like, oh, everybody knows how to do this. And of course, not the case. So graduated college in 2016, like 5 months before Trump got elected. And I was coming into adulthood and into womanhood in a very different country than I expected. I think most of us expected. And I, you know, was trying to navigate 20-something life and trying to figure out what I wanted to do and what my career would be. And I had sexist shit said to me at work. I saw a female friends of mine get underpaid. And I started realizing that when I had money, I had more options, right? When I had a financial foundation, when I had money in the bank, I could leave toxic situations I didn't want to be in anymore. I could donate to causes I believed in. I could go out with friends and not have to be like checking my bank account worried that I didn't have the money for it. So I realized that, you know, both as an individual and also on the systemic level, having a financial education was our best form of protest. It was our best form of agency and advocacy in a society that actively gatekeeps us from having money and having financial education. And so her first 100K was kind of born out of that, out of the realization both personally that when I had a financial stability, when I had, you know, a financial foundation, everything opened up to me. And in addition, when I was able to then take care of myself, I could take those resources and work to change the system for everybody. So that's what financial feminism is. That's what her first 100K stands for. And now we're a global movement with over 3 million followers. A podcast called Financial Feminist. And I run this full time with a team of 13 people, which is absolutely crazy.
That's insane. So as someone who grew up with financial education and financial guidance inside, I was like, we grew up with sex education. Was there a moment for you internally that you did have to redefine your relationship to money because of what you knew? Was there a moment where you said, oh, I learned all these things and why am I finding myself in this position or that position? Or why is this hard for me? Do you know what I mean? Like, where did you have to overcome something within your money management that really helped you blossom into the leader that you are today in this field?
A very thoughtful question. Yes. Again, I grew up with really financially minded parents, largely because they didn't grow up with a lot. So they made really smart financial choices and they were really frugal because I was their investment. I was where the money went, you know, for good schools and piano lessons and all those things. Like, they didn't grow up with a lot. So they made really strategic choices, you know, and sacrificed a lot in order for me to have what I did, you know, coupled with a lot of privilege. I'm a cisgendered white woman, you know, who grew up middle class. In doing so, though, is I saw both of my parents who, you know, obviously gave me this financial education that was really thoughtful, but I saw them make very stable choices, which was great. It gave me a really stable childhood, right? They made really smart financial choices that were very predictable. So my dad has always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but never has taken that leap because for him, it was like that risk was too great in trying to take care of my family. So he got the job and stayed for 15 years because, you know, it offered the 401k and the health insurance and all of those things. And again, I don't fault my parents. I'm very grateful that they made stable choices. However, when it was time for me to decide if I wanted to be a full-time entrepreneur or if I had the ability to be a full-time entrepreneur, all of those stable choices were all I had known. And the people who I was calling at age 25 were my parents still to go like, hi, I think I'm ready. And they were like, you need to keep your job. Like, you need the health insurance. You need the 401k. You need the stability. Like, you need to keep your job. And I'm like, well, I have money in the bank and I have momentum. And I was just on Good Morning America and I feel like I can do this. And it's not that they didn't believe in me. It was that all they had known and all the, you know, the choices they had made that had worked out for them were the stable, consistent choices. And so I perceived entrepreneurship as a big risk. And it is for a lot of people. However, I had all of my ducks in a row, right? I was overprepared to be an entrepreneur, but I still had that element of risk because all I had seen was my parents make really strategic, stable choices. So weirdly, that like foundation that was really healthy kind of bit me in the ass because I waited for much longer than I think I needed to take my business full time. And I joke with my parents, I'll call them every once in a while and be like, hi, remember when you told me that I should stay at my job, but now yeah,
look
I am,
at me now, bitch.
I am making like 60 times more.
Yeah.
And yeah, like loving my life a lot more. And I don't have to make somebody I don't respect rich anymore. I get to make myself and people I love rich and financially stable. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that our parents couldn't have fathomed, this type of work that no. we do and this type of newfound media and jobs and, you know, but workforce.
I am coming to you from an Airbnb in Brooklyn that I yeah. will live in for 6 weeks. And yeah. I have not had actually like an apartment for 9 months because I've just been traveling and working out of different Airbnbs. I came from LA before this. I was in Europe for 2 months last. Like that was not a thing. Right. And especially... No. My parents were married at 24. I'm almost 28. I'm not married, not even close. So, you know, there's also just, you know, generational things, right? Where there's a certain sure. expectation of what your role is. And, you know, I'm sure we will look back in however many years and see that there were certain roles that we played out, you know, in 2022. But yeah, it's a lot more flexible to your point. And it's also just with the internet and with, you know, the ability to, you know, both start businesses and think about them strategically as mission focused companies rather than just like, you know, how do I build a business for building a business's sake? A bunch more options are available to you. And again, coupled with a ton of privilege, like I'm able to, you know, to do this both because I worked my ass off and because, you know, I started on second base, which is something I like to acknowledge, you know, like if you're starting at home plate or you're starting at the field next door, it's a lot harder to get, you know, it's a lot harder to hit a home run. So that's, you know, that's part of it too. And that's why my work with financial feminism is like, not just how do we make good personal choices, but also how do we change the very systems that exist that deny any marginalized group, women, people of color, members of the LGBTQ community, disabled people, the same opportunities that are provided to cisgendered straight white men.
Absolutely. You mentioned that before you jumped into entrepreneurship, you had all your ducks in a row.
Yeah.
You were overprepared. What did that look like? And what would you have changed? I mean, you said like, I was overprepared. Do you advise people to
be that? I don't regret it. Yeah. I don't regret being that prepared. I have a theory that there's like two kinds of people who become entrepreneurs. There's the kind like me where like, I need every duck in a row. I need as much prep to do that as possible. Because again, I came from a very stable house where it was like, okay, if you're going to take a risk, you need to mitigate it as much as possible. So I think there's one kind of entrepreneur that like feels comfortable taking that leap because they've done all that work. And then there's another kind of potential entrepreneur that is like what I call like the skydive entrepreneur. That's just like, I'm going to fling myself out of the airplane. And
this one. me every day, all day.
I have a parachute, but like, I don't really know how to skydive, but I'll figure it out on the way down. Right. You're like, it's the motivation actually of like the flinging yourself off the cliff that actually gets you to like figure it out.
Yeah. As opposed that's
to
me.
Yeah. See, as opposed to me, that would panic me and shut me down. That would freak me out. So I think there's like the people who really thrive off of that, like, we're going to make it work. We're going to Tim Gunn it. Like, that's the only option we have.
I'm Tim Gunning it all day long, all over the place.
Yeah. See, I'm over here like, nope, I need money in the bank. I need momentum. Yeah. I need mentors and I need this and I need, you know, a plan, a 6-month plan of how we're going to make money. Like, that is something that I had. Yeah. So yeah, I had just hit my 100K goal. The Her First 100K origin story for me personally was saving $100,000 at 25. So I had literally hit my 100K goal. I had been on Good Morning America 3 weeks before I quit my job. I had, yeah, so not only money in the bank, I had momentum. I didn't just have an idea. I had an actual stable business that was making money. And, you know, I had a plan for how to increase that revenue. So I had all of these things figured out already. And that was what I needed in order to quit. Other people, it's like, nope, we're going to figure that out along the way. And that's going to motivate me to figure it out.
Hmm. It's so interesting just to hear the two different types, because I'm like, totally not me. I would never be me. And now I feel like that I've gotten my groove in business and I feel like I'm less falling from a cliff. Now I'm like, okay, how do I set up the foundation really, really beautifully for me to continue growing this? Well, the first couple of years.
And I feel the exact opposite, where I'm forcing myself now sometimes to fling myself off the cliff and figure it out. Like when I launched a podcast, I had no idea how the fuck to do that. I relied on a bunch of other people and asked really good questions and was like, well, we'll figure this out and hopefully it's successful. And then it blew up, which was great. But yeah, that was the thing. You start when you're, you know, when you get going as an entrepreneur and you start growing the business, there's a lot of things you don't know. And so it's like, okay, we're going to try it. We're going to see if it works. And if it doesn't work, we'll pivot or, you know, we'll change this variable or something's going to happen. And yeah, it's a mix of both all the time. Totally. Like prep as much as you can. And then you kind of just, you got to take the leap anyway.
So for someone that just heard that you saved your first 100K, you said 25. Is that what you just said?
25.
And someone is thinking, wow, do I do that? That's amazing. How do I do that? What are some three initial easy steps that they can start even perceiving what that journey would look like for them? Very quick, actionable, tangible ways to get going.
First thing, automate your savings. Set up an automatic transfer from your checking account to your savings account. Automate really everything that you can. Automate your bills. Automate, your savings. And if you work like a typical 9-to-5 job, you can actually do this through your payroll platform at work. So you can say, okay, every time I get paid, 80% is going to my checking account, 20% is going to my savings, or, you know, 70% is going to my checking account, 20% to savings, you know, this other savings account, 10% to my 401k, whatever that looks like. You don't get extra brownie points for making your financial life hard. Like, I think a lot of us feel that way. It's like, oh, this thing is complex. And I have this weird thing where sometimes I won't write things down because I tell myself, well, you should remember it. So you're not going to write things down. And then of course I forget. And then I like feel really shitty because I was like, you had the opportunity to make this easier on yourself, but like you weirdly thought it's ego, right? You like weirdly thought there was some sort of reward you got for not writing it down. It's very similar with money is, you know, either ostrich effect where you bury your head in the sand and you just act like your problems don't exist, which we talk about on Financial Feminist all the time. The second thing that happens is it's like, yeah, but this is complex and this is hard. And like, I have to earn it. And it's like, no, like make it so easy for yourself, like automate your savings. We call it in the industry, like paying yourself first. And if you're sending Netflix more money than you're setting aside for yourself, I'm not saying cancel your Netflix subscription, but like if you're sending Netflix or HelloFresh or whatever, more money automated per month, $1 billion, a multi-million dollar corporation than you're paying yourself, you are as much, I would say, more deserving of that money than you're giving to Netflix every month. So set money aside, autopilot makes your life so much easier. So that's the first thing. Second thing is you don't have to stop spending money. I just need you to stop spending money on shit that you don't care about.
Yes.
I don't need you to stop spending money. Deprivation doesn't work. 99% of diets fail because the more you tell me I can't have fried chicken, the more I fucking want Popeyes. I want fried chicken, right? So the way that we think about money is the same thing. If you go cold turkey and you're like, I'm not going to spend money and that's how I'm going to do this, right? Or if you're listening to financial experts like Dave Ramsey who are telling you, oh, the reason you're not rich is because that $5 coffee. If that $5 coffee gives you so much joy, and you can tell that I've had coffee today because I'm like tripping balls right now. But
oh, I spent an $8 coffee today. You know,
this is literally an $8 iced coffee. And you can tell I've had coffee because like, this is why I can't do drugs, because I'm like, I am like so hyped on a iced oat milk mocha. Like I am, yeah. I am here. Like I am yeah. ready to, I'm like, lift a car. Somebody needs saving. Let's do it. if coffee brings you joy, I'm never going to tell you to not spend money on coffee. It just might mean that you can't buy something else. Right. So like travel is so important to me and I'm willing to spend thousands of dollars traveling, but I'm not willing to spend money, you know, $1,000 on a sweater because I would rather spend it on something that actually brings me joy. So look at your purchases without shame, without judgment and be like, okay, what am I spending money on that feels like very lukewarm? Or what am I spending money on that's just a habit?
Like Postmates for me. I want to kill Postmates every single day of my life.
Right. Or it's like, I go and get a $5 coffee at 2 p.m. just as my excuse to get out of the office. And it's like, again, if that's like your reward and you love it, great. I think for most people, it's like, I need an excuse to go on a walk. And it's like, no, you don't. Capitalism says you need an excuse. You can go take a break. Like, it's fine. Right.
Yeah.
Like you can go take a walk without buying a coffee if you don't even taste that coffee anymore. Right. Or if it's just habit routine and you don't even enjoy it. So, you know, there's tons of things that we purchase that just feel, yeah, lukewarm or that we don't love. Your hard-earned money should be spent on the things that make you so happy. Like you work so fucking hard for that money. Let's spend it on things that provide you ease and joy and beauty and make your life so much better as opposed to things you're kind of like, either I regret buying that or regret spending money on that or like, yeah, that was fine. Like, I don't want you looking at your money being like, yeah, it was fine. Like that's a very passive way to manage your money. Like use your money as a tool to bring you so much fucking joy. Like that's a great idea. Yes. So that's the second thing is like, you don't have to deprive yourself. You don't need to stop spending money. I just need you to stop spending money on things you don't care about. And the third thing, and we see this with women so often, is that women will get to the point where they're really good at saving, but they won't actually invest. Now, what is investing? Investing is contributing to a retirement account like a 401k or an IRA, right? And we have a whole investing platform that we launched called Treasury earlier this year because we saw that the number one reason women don't invest is fear. Fear of getting started, fear of making a mistake, fear of like losing money, right? So this is literally the most common thing we see. And 26%, as low as 26% of women who can invest actually are. And that is such a low percentage. You won't be able to retire if you don't invest. Like the way you build wealth is investing. And you've been told by the patriarchy that investing is complicated, so you don't do it. You've been told by a system that is trying to keep you underpaid and overworked that investing is too scary and it's too complicated, so just don't do it, right? And then when we believe it, of course, not only are we not growing our wealth, but we don't have agency. And it's a bunch of Wall Street chads who make themselves feel better by saying it's complicated because they're overcompensating for something. And also because it makes them feel smart. Investing's really not that hard. It's really not that hard, but I need you to get started, even if it's just a small amount of money. So if you have a 401k at your work, contribute to it. If you get a match at your 401k, meaning that if you contribute a certain percentage, your company will double that automatically, please do that. Take advantage of that. And again, I think a lot of people think not only is investing complicated, but you need a ton of money to do it. You don't. You need like $100, $200. Like you don't need thousands of dollars. And it's more important to get started earlier because of time and compound interest than it is trying to wait until you're older and you think you'll have more money. So those are probably my three things. Automate your savings, automate as much as you can, spend money on things that bring you joy and figure out what actually does bring you joy and invest as early and often as possible.
I want to talk about closing the investing gap because you mentioned that you guys have started a platform and that is something, I mean, I have definitely inherited that type of mindset where I am like, I don't understand. Like, I'll just give it, you know, I do contribute to Roth IRA, but it's like, I don't know what
that is.
I'm just like putting money in. I don't understand it. And my boyfriend and her husband, the men, you know, they look at the stocks every day. And I'm like, so talk to us about what you guys have built and what are, again, some more like tangible steps for someone to get started and maybe educate themselves.
Also, I just want to like admit to something, which is so terrible, but I had money. My dad gave me a little bit of money to invest and I couldn't fucking do it. I couldn't open the account. I wouldn't do it. I was like, my husband does that. Let my husband do it. Like, he's great at it. He checks it every day. I don't want to check it every day. Da, da, da. But
you actually don't have to check it every day, but I'll talk about it.
I know.
It.
You don't.
It's stupid.
You shouldn't.
They should, but I'm like, I like making money. Yes. I like making money. So it's like, I have a part of me that is very, very empowered in the money space, makes the money, budgets the personal finances. But again, like, I just could not open the fucking investment account. I like gave it to my husband and he did totally. It.
So yeah, we are very fortunate. Our dad was like, my dad has done very well for himself, but he didn't really like invest in the stock market. And then he started dating this woman who did really well. And so she...
No. Incorrect. He's always invested in the stock market.
Okay. But not... Okay. Whatever. Not in the way that he has now. He's like doing it in a different way. It is true. He told
our
me.
Our college, yeah, but he's, I mean, our college funds were from investment on stock market.
But, okay. I'm just, you're wrong, but it's okay. So he was like, I'm going to give you guys money. Look at Tori. This is, welcome to sisterhood. So he was like, I'm going to give you guys money. Go put it somewhere. I was like, okay. So then I opened up Charles Schwab.
Okay.
And I bought some stuff. It's been doing terribly, but you know, I bought Restoration Hardware because I was like,
oh, did you bought an individual stock? Sounds like it.
I sure did. I bought Restoration Hardware because I thought that they would give me a cloud couch if I bought their stock, and they didn't do that. Nope. So
I love the dream though. I appreciate you dreaming. You're dreaming big.
I literally was going to go into the store and be like, you know, I bought your stock.
I'm so an
like,
owner. Can I I'm have an
a,
owner here.
Can I have a discount? But no.
Hi, I bought a share of Tesla. I would like an $80,000 car, please.
I am a part owner here. I don't know if you know.
Okay. Anyway, so
I'm contributing to Elon Musk's incomparable wealth. Sounds great.
Exactly. Okay. So, and I don't look at it because it scares me. It's gone way down. I know that the market's really bad right now, so I don't look at it. But yeah, talk to us about what the sisters who are listening can do to get started.
Cool. I could talk to you about this for like 3 hours. Okay. First, thank you for sharing and acknowledging. You are not alone. In 2022, the vast majority of women who are coupled with men in a heteronormative relationship are doing the day-to-day finances, the budgeting and the coupon clipping and the like grocery shopping, right? The men are doing the wealth building. They are doing the real estate. They're doing the investments. They're doing the like the negotiate their salaries. In addition, again, one of these like patriarchal narratives that is perpetuated, it's socially acceptable for men to talk about money and to be very public about money. We reward men who are wealthy and who talk about money, right? Like you think about like, not that guys do this a lot, because I don't know, but they'll go out on the golf course, right? And they'll not only talk about money a ton, but then they'll like take a picture and they're all in like Rolexes. And then what are the comments? But they're like, cool Rolex, bro. You must be doing well for yourself. Those are the comments, right? If I was to be photographed with, you know, something that is very like outwardly wealthy, a Chanel bag, a Dior bag, something like that, my comments are most likely going to be, why were you spending money on something so frivolous, right? And so there is that expectation just around men are more socially conditioned to talk about money and are expected, of course, to not only learn how to grow their wealth, to have that be part of the conversation, but they're also encouraged in a way that women are penalized. Men are encouraged, women are penalized. So there's so many things, right, that go into this whole investing gap. In addition, when we do actually start investing, either we've waited much longer than men have, or we actually haven't gotten started at all because, again, it feels too scary or we don't know how to do it or all of these things. Again, I could talk about this forever. The last thing I'll say specifically too is that we think of investing as individual stocks, because that's all we've been told, or that's what the media tells us, right? It's like Leo DiCaprio yelling in a phone on Wolf of Wall Street about like trading this company, right? Or buying this company. Like that's the media of what investing is. That's actually really risky. That's a pretty risky form of investing, because what's happened is you put all your eggs in one basket, or like five baskets if you buy five companies, right? So like, let's talk about your Restoration Hardware example. Putting money in Restoration Hardware could be a great investment potentially, but it's potentially, you take on a lot of risk doing that. So if we put all our money in Restoration Hardware, right? And Restoration Hardware does great, amazing. But if they do terrible, then that you're putting all your eggs in one basket. So part of investing, what's important, and we talk about this on Treasury, which is our investing platform, is diversification, not putting all of your eggs in one basket, right? And you don't have to just invest in individual stocks. I actually only own 2 individual stocks, and I only bought those last year. And I've been investing for 6 years.
Okay. So Tori, this is what I was talking about. Our dad didn't do individual stocks. He's now recently doing individual stocks. He was investing in like mutual funds, yep, right?
Or ETFs or index funds.
Yes, yeah. That's what I meant.
So we explain literally part of what Treasury is again, we built it because everything else there sucks, frankly. Right. It's either like super finance bro-y and condescending and doesn't give you space to ask questions about like, I'm sorry, what is a 401k? What is a stock? What do all these things mean? And in addition, when you have tried to invest, and I did this too, I would go to Yahoo Finance or Charles Schwab or Fidelity, and I would look at their interface and I would be like, this may as well be written in German. And I do not speak German. Like, I have no idea what's happening. So we literally start people with an hour long live workshop with me where I go through and I'm like, here's what investing is. Here's how to research your investments. Here's the number one mistake I see new investors make. Here's how to open that investing account. And then they actually invest live on the workshop. So we had a workshop a couple days ago. We had 1,000 people there, 80% of which were first-time investors, had never invested. And then combined, they invested over $130,000, which was amazing. And when we look again at a society and a system that actively doesn't want you to invest, that is literally like statistic changing. And so when it comes to investing, again, 401k, IRA, these are accounts. These are not actual investments. I hear that a lot too, is people think like, oh, if I contribute to a 401k, I'm investing. You are, but that's not the investment. That's just the account. The number one mistake I see people make is they put money in a 401k or an IRA, but then they don't choose their investments. Investing is a two-step process. When you put money in the account, like a bank account, you're done, right? You put $1,000 in a bank account, you're done. Investing, you have not actually invested until you've chosen your investments. So when you take that $1,000, you put it in the account, that's step one. Step two is you have to go buy things with the money. I think about it like a gift card, right? Like I put $50 on a TJ Maxx gift card and it's really not worth anything to me until I buy plants and candles and throw pillows, right? So you have to do step two. And we talk about that more in Treasury, but one of the things that I see so commonly with women, because again, we've never been taught this, is you think investing is putting your money in just like a normal bank account. You have to make sure that you've actually gone and chosen your investments, which is what we teach in Treasury. So you have to do step two. And if you don't know if you haven't done step two, if you're not sure, go check your investing accounts. And if they have not grown or lost money, you haven't done it, right? Because it's just sitting in purgatory waiting for you to invest it.
So I opened up, I don't even know what it's called. I opened up something that's a retirement situation.
Okay.
And I chose, and while I chose this, I thought it was like a branding scam. So you can tell me, not a scam, but they said, what do you want to invest in? Uh-huh. And I said, I don't know. And so he said, there's a group of businesses that are very high profile, Google, whatever, all the big ones.
Can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
Who was the person you talked to?
Somebody that works at Chase Bank.
Okay. Do you know if he is a fiduciary? A fiduciary is somebody who is legally obligated to act in your best interest when they give you advice.
I believe so. He was like appointed as like a, I think like a financial planner type of thing, different than a fiduciary.
Nope. You can be a financial planner who's a fiduciary. This is part of the financial bullshit again, where like financial feminism comes into play, where you realize just how fucked the system is. Obama had put a law in place that said like you have to be a fiduciary, and then Trump overturned it. So a fiduciary is someone who's legally obligated to act in your best interest, right? Financial planners, financial advisors, some of them are fiduciaries. And if you are going to work with somebody, I really don't think most people need a financial advisor. You're paying them a certain fee and you can learn how to navigate it on your own and not pay them that fee. But if you are going to do it, you have to make sure they're a fiduciary, because a lot of times, chances are if you worked at Chase, let's hope he was a fiduciary, right? And we'll see based on the advice he gave you in a second when you tell me. But the other thing is that unfortunately, a lot of people, they're not fiduciaries or financial advisors. They're salesmen, right? Like they're trying to get you to buy their thing. But please continue.
Yes. I made sure to ask how he makes money because I wanted to see how he directly makes money off of
beautiful question
what I yep. was doing. And he said, I'm pretty sure he said he doesn't make money off this situation. He just sets up the account for me and okay. like whatever. So, but I did, I always like to ask that question
so before question.
You do anything with money, like not accusatory, just nope. be like, oh, how do you get paid for this transaction?
We get asked that a lot with Treasury. Like, how do you make money? Yeah. How do you, yep. Totally. Yeah,
exactly. So I decided to invest in a group of businesses that are extremely large corporations at this point, but all of them have committed to an eco-conscious or socially conscious pledge.
Yep.
And so I enjoyed that aspect. I don't know how much that actually like does for their businesses, like how much they're actually pledging to do good in the world, but that's what I chose.
Yeah. It sounds like you invested in a socially responsible fund.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So you invested. So a fund, again, we explained this more in Treasury. A fund is simply a bunch of companies, right? Or a yes. bunch of different stocks, right? And that's a great way to diversify because rather than, again, putting all your eggs in one basket, you can say, okay, I want to buy one share of this fund where it owns the entire US stock market. So if I buy one share of this fund, I own a tiny little sliver of every single company in the US stock market. You can also do this with what's called socially responsible funds. Now there's various levels of this. Some of them are just like no firearms. Some of them are like no oil. Some of them are like as intense as like you have to be like women founded or women led, or you like have to like very publicly have pledged this. So there's varying levels of social responsibility. But it sounds like what you did was invest in a socially responsible fund. Yeah.
So, yeah. So something that I did, so I worked with someone at Edward Jones and I, no,
nope.
Oh, no,
no.
Nope. Okay.
We're backtracking.
Oh my God. Okay. Wait, but I love my guy. He's like so cute, but I also don't
that's
know.
That's how they get you.
I don't know if he's a fiduciary now.
Edward Jones makes me really nervous.
Oh no, what do I do?
I mean, I'm happy to talk to you about it after and see like what his deal is.
Wait, what's different? Because I mean, I have my Roth IRA set up with them and I also have a mutual fund that I contribute to with them. Oh no. Oh, Tori's I'm face is
Edward
scaring
Jones
me.
Bad.
Edward Jones bad.
I'll literally send you some articles.
Oh no.
Super high fees, like a ridiculous high fee that you don't need to okay. be paying and that you
okay.
don't pay in a lot of other places. Because again, like if you want somebody to guide you through this, I totally understand that impulse. One, you can do this yourself. That's what we teach in Treasury is we like, it's the happy medium between like having somebody do it for you and you being completely on your own. Like we're in the Venn diagram middle where we're like, okay, we're going to teach you how to fish and teach you what to do and give you a supportive community rather than just like sending you out on your own and you expecting you to do this. And again, regardless, I don't care, like come to Treasury, great, go somewhere else. Like I'm saying this not as the way to get you to Treasury, but like Edward Jones right. in particular, it's like super high in fees. Okay. Because what you're doing.
My guy was good because I asked him to do something for me and he said, that's going to charge you extra. Don't sign up for that.
Great. Right.
My guy's great.
There are better financial professionals out there. Again, that's why you have to ask fiduciary, but Edward Jones in particular has a really bad reputation for charging a okay. hefty amount in fees. And again, I could talk about this for hours. Specifically, what happens with a lot of these companies like Edward Jones is they know that women don't know how to invest. And so a lot of their clients are women or other marginalized groups, right? So they come in and they don't know any better. And so what ends up happening is they're charging a super high fee, but we have no idea if that's a high fee because we've never been taught this. Right. And
oh my God,
it just gets dicey pretty
out.
Quick.
I'm freaking out because
don't freak out. don't freak out.
I don't even know if I should say this on the pod, but actually whatever, fuck it. So, I mean, this guy, he's a nice guy. He like took me out to coffee. He explained the stock market to me and like how funds worked. And I was
didn't you need that information though?
I don't know. He's explained it to me. He was very nice.
Was it in a way that you understood? And did you feel like it was yeah. mansplaining? Because a lot of times what we have is like, was his name Steve? Because they're always named Steve.
His name was not Steve. No, he was a nice guy, but he was like drawing me diagrams because I really did not know what was going on. So
sure.
This is very fascinating. Okay. We're going to need to talk after this. How hard is it to transfer?
Not hard.
Okay, great.
It's just going to be like logistical piece of homework.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. We're doing that when we log off of this. Okay.
Yeah. I'm literally, I'll read you. It's like the first thing when I Google Edward Jones bad, because I needed to get to where I needed to go. Like I'm on collegeinvestor.com, who actually we've worked with them before. They're friends of ours. Okay. So if, oh God, I'm looking at this. Oh, it's so bad. Okay.
Oh no.
So they charge a management fee, which is pretty typical in companies like Edward Jones. Their management fee is 0.5% up to 1.35%. Now that doesn't seem like a lot,
it's a lot
but
of money.
When you open an account on your own and you invest in something like index funds, which is what I personally invest in, I'm paying 0.03% in fees.
Wow.
Okay. That adds up when you get some cash.
0.03% is, to put it in context, $3 for every $10,000. It's nothing, right? I might also have some, like, depending on what platform I go to, I might have some fees in terms of like when I sell or when I purchase, right? And then you also have taxes on top of that, but we're not going to discuss taxes right now, just fees. So you also have fees if you work with what's called a robo-advisor. You've probably heard of these, Elevest, Acorns, Wealthfront, Wealthsimple, yes, Betterment, yeah, right? They've done a really great job of getting people who have never invested, invested, which is great, but they are charging you a fee to do that, right? Now that fee for like a couple of years is not crazy. It's typically like 0.25% or 0.5%, right? So again, one of the reasons we built Treasury is like, you can do it on your own. You don't need to pay somebody else this fee. If we look at Edward Jones, minimum to manage it for you, like a robo-advisor is managing it for you, but not like at the level of, you know, taking you out to coffee. The management fee on Edward Jones, it starts at 0.5%. Now that doesn't seem like a lot, but 0.5% of $3 million, $4 million, which is something we hope, right? You become a millionaire, take care of yourself in retirement. That's a lot of money. And then it goes up to, according to this graph, 1.35%, which is a lot. It's a lot.
Okay. We're getting out of there. We're getting out of there. Okay. Yeah. Wow. I am very fortunate for this
very podcast.
Oh my God. These are the moments that change your life, you know?
Totally. Like,
holy shit.
She's still Googling. She's still just like, fuck this.
I'm literally scrolling through this and I'm like, huh. Like, so literally it rated, right? Like Edward Jones versus like Fidelity versus Vanguard. Fidelity and Vanguard are what they call DIY investing platforms. And this is the kind of brokerage. These are the kind of investing companies we get you set up with in Treasury. You're going to pay $0 for every time you like trade, every time you like buy, which is probably at least once a month, hopefully, if you're consistent. You're going to pay Edward Jones $5 every time you do that.
Whoa.
And okay. Then you're also going to pay up to 1.35% to have somebody manage it for you.
All right, we're getting out of there. Wow.
Ultimately, I will say, this is my legal disclaimer. I forgot to give this off the top. You okay. need to make sure you're making your own good financial choices. I am not a financial advisor. I don't know you. I don't know your life. Make your smart financial choices and do what's right for you. Edward Jones might work for some people. I will say it's like, the fees are really high and it's very easy for a company like that to make money with people who don't understand what they're doing. And that's not those people's fault. Again, we were not taught this. I sat down with my dad and he explained how to invest. And that was a privilege. And that's what I'm trying to do with everybody else. Right. But for people who have never invested and don't know any better, like you're like, I don't know what I'm spending in fees. Also 1% seems reasonable and it's not.
Totally. Oh my God.
Wow.
Okay. All right. Let's do rapid fire.
Sorry. I don't mean to stress you out.
We're having revelations. She's having revelations.
I'm so happy you're here. Like this wouldn't have happened. Like this is perfect.
Let's just be great. I think we should just be grateful for the fact and proud of Mads for even going to somewhere to set it up. It's a great first step.
Oh God. No, the fact that you even got started. Cause again, 26%, as low as 26% of women have never invested. So you've done, I'm just optimizing. I'm like at personal finance, like 201, right? Or 301. Yes. 101 is like, let's get you started investing.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's not pay, I'm calling him Steve. Let's not pay Steve/Edward Jones a bunch of money to do it when you don't have to, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, perfect. All right, let's do rapid fire.
Yes, I'm ready.
Number one, what is a money myth that you would like to debunk?
That keeping a balance on your credit card boosts your credit score. It does not. It just puts you in debt.
I never even heard that.
So our mom told me that. And I was like,
I pay it off.
She was like, you're supposed to leave like 100 whatever. And I was like, what? No.
No, no, no. So if you put $1,000 on a credit card and your credit card bill is due on the 15th and you pay, let's say, let's use your mom's example, $900 and you keep $100 on your credit card and now it's the 16th.
You pay interest on that.
It's overdue.
That's, yeah. I don't know where that came from.
The credit card company.
Someone told me that. Yeah. And I was like, that makes no sense.
I've never heard that. I've always, my like big thing is always pay off the credit card.
We haven't been able to trace it back, but my not so conspiracy theory. Like, again, we have not been able to actually trace it back. But if I had to guess, again, not so conspiracy theory, it keeps you in debt, right? To tell people. And it temporarily does increase your score because, you know, part of what a credit score is like you making payments and showing you're like a smart lendee, right? Like, okay, like I'm going to make payments towards my debt. So that's part of the reason why when you pay off a bunch of debt, your credit score temporarily goes down. However, a like 50 point increase in your credit score is not worth you going into credit card debt. That's 25% interest. Like that's not worth it. You can boost your credit score in way other more responsible ways.
That's a good one.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Rapid fire. What are some apps or tools that you, other than Treasury, that you recommend going to either start budgeting or,
I have all of them on my website. It's at herfirst100k.com/tools. I really like Personal Capital. I've worked with them for a long time. They offer a free net worth tracker and you can see all of your accounts in one place. So when you're like trying to check like your debt or your retirement savings or your just general savings, you can see it all in one place as opposed to having to like remember your logins for every bank, which I don't remember. So it's a really great way to track everything. That's
good. Okay. And our last question that we love to ask every woman who comes on OKSIS podcast, if you could brag about one thing and don't be humble, what would you brag about?
I built a multi 7-figure business and never took a dime of venture capital. And I also, other than like a weekend where I spent $20 on Facebook ads, I have never, never bought Facebook ads, Instagram ads, like all of it's been organic. And as an ex social media marketer, like that shit does not happen. You don't build a 80% profitable business with no venture capital, no outside investment, no angel investment, and without reliance on something like Facebook. So I'm super fucking proud of that.
I'm super fucking proud. I'm super fucking proud. That's really fucking good. That is really fucking good. Okay, thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell everybody where they can find you, your podcast, your website, all this
and
stuff?
And the TikTok, I mean, everything.
All of it. Yeah, so I'm at herfirst100k on all the socials, herfirst100k, as well as herfirst100k.com. And I also host the Financial Feminist Podcast, which is one of the top business podcasts in the world, which is very exciting. So you can catch me over there as well.
Beautiful. Oh. And you can find us on Instagram at OKSIS Podcast. You know where, sisters. We love you.
We love you.
No tienes que esperar a que te paguen para finalmente invitar a tus papás a comer. Solo te tiene que salir una oferta de sus favoritos en el McDonald's app. Ahorra con el app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. En McDonald's participantes.
Do you ever feel like you're struggling through motherhood? You're not alone. I'm Erica Jossa, host of the MomWell podcast, therapist and mom of three. Join me each Wednesday as I sit down with guests, including psychologists, pediatricians, psychiatrists, fertility specialists, lactation consultants, and more to unravel the myths of motherhood. With expert advice, practical tips, self-love, and some coping skills to help you along the way, you can become the mother you want to be. Listen to the MomWell podcast at momwell.com/listen or on your favorite podcast platform.